Welcome to Spider-Man and His Amazing Fans. I'm Bry Guy.
I'm Jason. Today's episode, The Origin of Iceman. Brian, here we are. This is your favorite part of the Amazing Friends series. The part you've been waiting for, my friend. It's the origin story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The flashback inside of an origin story, or the origin story inside of a flashback, as it were.
Right.
I mean, now, if you want to write a novel that Brian's going to read, folks, if you're out there listening, just put in a flashback.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in. I'm doing
the Wayne's World.
The Wayne's World. Right.
Wavy hands. Yeah. Oh gosh.
The Iceman cometh.
Right? And I don't mean to spoil anything for the dear listener who hasn't seen him yet, or if you don't recall, I will say all three origins are presented in similar style, where the origin is a flashback from a current story.
Okay.
I'm
prepared for that.
To me, I think that works for this series. Like, I feel like it would be too confusing to like throw back the timeline and be like, okay, present day, here's the origin, you know? Like, I think in the continuity, particularly since they're not beginning with these episodes, it makes sense to flash them back.
Right. And I didn't really expect it. I really thought it would be like told in the past of this universe. Mm-hmm, so there was a moment and you can't see my handwritten notes, but I have scratched out. So Bobby and Angel and Peter have been friends for this long before any of them were superheroes. That worked out well, but no. They're about to reminisce. Yes.
Right. Exactly.
At the beginning.
Exactly. Yes. And it was, Iceman, of course, who goes first here, with the origin of Iceman. Boy, one of the things we saw in season one that we liked was every now and then there would be a really cool title card for the episode. Mm-hmm. This one came up and I was like, big yawn. Like, it's just Iceman over a blue background. It was pretty lame.
Did you think that the Silver Surfer motif was on full display in this title card even more so than normal? Or was
I would say so.
Yeah. Iceman is based on a real X-Man.
But I
feel that they're really were trying to capitalize on Silver Surfer every time Iceman's on the screen.
Man. You don't think so? I don't think in the 80s anybody really knew who Silver Surfer was. I think the cosmic Marvel titles were really on the fringe back then. You either had to be really into Fantastic Four. I suppose, and even Fantastic Four, like Silver Surfer's, but like first comes in with Galactus. I mean, that's throwing it in the Wayback Machine, and then
right.
I don't know.
Maybe it's the generation we're in, where you know Silver Surfer was like a cool superhero, or like a villain, and Joe Satriani had a Silver Surfer album like in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So maybe we're of the generation where Silver Surfer was more, you know,
wasn't
front and center.
Wasn't there did he have his own cartoon series like around the same time as Spider-Man and X-Men in the 90s or anything like that? I didn't watch those the first time around, but
Fantastic Four had their own show.
And he was probably on there relatively often.
And he was also the logo for the Marvel films, like, you know, like, I don't know what that word is, like their key card or whatever. At the end of an episode, they would show Silver Surfer on the Marvel logo. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I always liked it. Like, the first time I heard of Silver Surfer was when we were kids. I forget exactly how this happened, but my sisters and I ended up with you remember the sticker books from when we were kids?
Yeah.
Like you would buy, it was like instead of buying baseball cards or whatever, you would buy a pack of stickers
and they'd go in the book.
The stickers were numbered and you matched the number in the book. Yeah, this was for, again, you millennial children, this is a thing that we did
before the internet.
Yeah. And we had, so I don't remember exactly how this happened, but there was a Marvel Secret Wars sticker book.
Sure.
We somehow ended up with like a gross of these. Our folks did. And so we had like, I mean, I can't even tell you how many books we had, Brian. It was like it was like we got a shipment of them. We had literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of packs of stickers, if not thousands, and dozens upon dozens of books. You know, that were completely filled in. No, that we got. And so then.
Oh, but and, eventually you could fill them.
And eventually, I think we ended up with probably like. We probably had like 8 or 9 totally filled in books. That was the other thing about the sticker books. Like you barely ever filled one. Yeah.
Because I got repeats and I'd have to trade with my friends at school. Or they'd be like, what are you doing with those? I collect baseball cards like a real boy.
Exactly. So, and I actually found it recently as we're, expecting, the new baby and dad's stuff is getting pushed around in closets again. But I found my only remaining copy of the filled in Secret Wars book. This whole story to tell you that's where I first saw Silver Surfer Secret Wars sticker book. And I always thought he was cool.
Yeah. He's a badass, he is a villain, right, in the Fantastic Four universe.
Well, he started out that way because he was introduced as a villain because he was the Herald of Galactus, which means he comes to the planet first to say, hey, you're in luck, Galactus is going to eat your planet, so just sit tight till the big guy gets here and he's going to devour this. And it's in that initial story that he kind of teams up with Fantastic Four and turns on Galactus and saves the Earth.
That's coming back to me now too. Yeah, but anyway. He's just a cool looking like the way that he's drawn and animated is cool.
Plus, he's got a surfboard that works in space.
How cool is that?
I know.
And he's silver.
Mm-hmm. Got a lot of things going for him. Yeah.
All this to say, he's a lot cooler than Bobby Drake, aka Ice.
Yeah, yeah. But but it's understandable that you could confuse it. It would make sense to me too to say the confusion of the way Silver Surfer and Iceman are drawn. Because I think in more recent years, I haven't actually read X-Men books in a very long time, like 20 years or something like that. But it seems to me that Iceman's powers and things like evolved where he got more like kind of spiky icy and like his iced up state became a permanent thing where he couldn't de-ice anymore.
Oh, he could thaw.
That at least gives him a distinct look from Silver Surfer,
Right.
So there's that on one hand, but on the other hand, a bummer for for Bobby Drake, who, I mean,
like that.
Man, in this episode, he stays on brand. He's a little bit of a horn dog, part of his story is, well, I really wanted to get with this girl, Judy.
Judy, right.
He didn't say it that way, but it was like, there obviously would be a girl involved in the origin of Iceman.
Right. And he doesn't want any of the girls to think he's a cold fish.
No.
Or give them the cold shoulder.
Both
jokes are in there.
Another one of his choice lines in this episode is like, even though I was learning to control my power, I was still too chicken to show anybody. Like, chicken as a verb. as an adjective.
Too chicken.
Yeah, I was too chicken.
I was too chicken. That's a lot of motivation for a lot of superheroes, Jason.
Yeah.
Spider-Man was too chicken to be Spider-Man until his Uncle Ben got killed. Then he stepped up.
Oh, then he became Turkey. let's see. I mentioned the title card.
That's where we stopped. Sorry,
that's where we diverted from.
We're off to the races, folks.
Oh boy, I liked the way the episode kind of started on this. Dark and stormy night. I liked that vibe. We get that video man billboard right at the open, and there's the truck coming through. So we know immediately video man will be rejoining us, unless you were like not paying attention, like obviously.
Right, there's a lot of foreshadowing. Right? Mm-hmm. And is this the second or third time we've seen video?
This
man?
Is the second coming of the video man. There's a third in season 3.
And I made note that it feels like Video Man is the villain of this iteration of Spider-Man, because he's really hard to beat and he shows up more than once.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the Joker of Batman, or normally what we'd see in Green Goblin or Doc Ock in Spider-Man, where hard to beat and you keep seeing him. So but
so
not
far,
just literally, he's very two-dimensional, just very one-dimensional. There's not a whole lot to him.
No.
Literally and figuratively.
It's two sides of a very thin plane. Yeah.
Not fleshed out at all.
Right. I see what you did there.
Thanks.
No, both times we've seen him, you're right. The Spider Friends, they go toe to toe with him, but he kind of beats himself both times.
Mm-hmm.
The first time when Elektra was there, it was some sort of weird electrical overload, right, or something like that. Spider-Man Spider-Man did some flippy flips, I think, in the first Video Man episode to avoid basically being shot Electrified. With video blasts, but then the Video Man and Elektra kind of knocked each other out.
Yep.
And this time, it's Video Man and his video mates that, for whatever reason, just take each other out. But that's way down the line. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves.
Right. First, we got to figure out what made Iceman Iceman, because the only way to know why he's losing power is to go back to the very beginning.
Right.
And Spider-Man / Peter Parker just so happens to have... Is it a memory portal or a memory?
So it was. He called it a memory probe device.
Memory probe device.
This was at the Special Projects Laboratory at ESU.
At the SPL, the ESU. Sure,
right.
Sure. Yeah, and I feel like this was kind of shades of what we saw with Green Goblin, either in this one or in Spidey 81, where you have like a thing you put on your head that makes you relive memories,
enables
or
the flashbacks.
Memories.
Yeah,
and
puts them on display for other people to see, like a TV. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. But so was that in this one or Spidey 81 where Green Goblin did that? I think it was
both.
Spidey 81. Was it both?
Yeah,
that's right, because they're identical episodes.
Because it's basically the same episode with different characters. Yeah,
different voice actors. And Norma Osborn.
Right,
Mona.
Right,
Osborn. But I think it's a clever plot device. It's very comic booky. I think like to have like a, for lack of a better word, like a MacGuffin where something just appears just so that it can serve a purpose of this plot device. And that's exactly what this is, where it's like, we want to know Bobby's origin story. So it just so happens, here's a memory thing.
Yeah, right.
The thingamadoopa, which is a better title. Memory thingamadoopa.
Thingamadoopa.
A memory what's it? A memory what's it?
I'm going to start saying thingamadoopa. I love that.
Jeanette, but you can use it for sure.
the scene that led to Bobby putting on the memory probes. I liked that because what happened was, you know, we saw the Video Man machine rolling through it, and it was basically in a junk pile, going to the scrapyard to get crushed. And a bolt of lightning hits the machine and, of course, lights it up. And like
more
I said, Brian, you know, those were the good old days, the 80s, when if your appliances got struck by lightning, it just turns them on. You know, no problems.
You bring it into the repair and they say there's nothing wrong with it.
It's perfectly fine.
It's fine.
Have you tried?
Just got struck by lightning.
You bring in your toaster, you're like, it won't toast anymore. And they're like, have you tried leaving it outside when there's a storm?
It gives it that extra juice that you need.
It would probably work. No, but then another bolt of lightning like lights a fire, and there's this, and there was a kind of a. Frenzied rescue for the spider friends of helping out the firefighters there, and Firestar does this cool woo-woo-woo kind of tornado vortexy thing to put the fire out. Iceman does his powers blip out on him, and
can't flake. He can't even flake. He says
no, not even any snow.
Right.
This was the first moment that I noticed too. They did a lot of new animation sequences for this episode. Did you pick up on that too before, like, looking at my notes, like, where I was watching it going, man, this all looks really fresh compared to the last episodes, the last couple episodes we were watching, where they recycled a lot of stuff in that first season, you know, and I mean, just, you know, the sequences of like Spider-Man swinging around or like the other spider friends like transforming and all this kind of stuff. They redid a whole bunch of that stuff with like different angles or, and like, I noticed there was a lot of different, new stuff in the action sequences in particular.
Yeah, like stuff that I think all of the heroes did, like the way that when eventually Iceman could ice up, it looked a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I felt like Spider-Man was doing a little bit of different thwipping. Did you catch some of those too?
Yeah. And yeah, he did a lot more like he was doing more like barrel rolling and kind of he would more acrobatic maneuvers than, you know, just kind of like swinging and landing kind of stuff. Yeah.
And there were, I think, about 9 months in between episodes here.
Right, right.
December to September. So they took the summer and I don't know. You've seen all of this season. I have not. Mm-hmm. But I won't be surprised if they reuse some of those in season two now. Because they made them all.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And we only get three episodes. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked the new stuff. I started picking up on it in the sequence with the fire, and then like throughout the whole episode, it just continues on. So that was pretty cool. Iceman's powers flake out on him, and he's like, "Oh, what happened?"
Yeah, and good pun. They flake out. Good one.
And Jason. And right away, Firestar is like, "Has it ever happened before? Maybe when you were very young." And Spider-Man is like, "Memory probe time." So they go and
I'm glad you said it.
They do that. They do that whole thing. What did you? How did you feel about the Iceman origin? You liked that stuff, right?
I did. I thought it was an easy sort of writing trick to go, I was just born this way. I'm a mutant. Mm-hmm, like, I actually was a little bit glad that it wasn't, you know, I found some radioactive ice.
Right.
And it made me Iceman. Mm-hmm. And I think that was pretty easy to do because it had already been written that he was an X-Man, singular, originally. And you know more about X-Men than I do. Is Iceman like a prevalent original...
Oh yeah,
Lee X-Men.
Yeah, okay. The origin that they referred to with the X-Men, that's all canonical stuff. Those were the original five: Cyclops, Marvel Girl, Beast, Iceman, and Angel. That's the five X-Men. And yeah, I mean, I thought that the whole thing there was really well done. And like I said, just they did a nice job of keeping it more or less comic canon. It was certainly with a kid's show, it's easier to just explain, you know, mutant says, oh, they're born with these extra abilities. You know, it's much more convoluted and it needs a lot more explaining to like explain puberty to young children because again, in comic books, because that also kind of makes sense. It's like, well, when a mutant, you know, is sort of growing and changing, that's usually when powers manifest. And then all of a sudden, you know, they have something else that they're dealing with. It's just, it makes, obviously, makes X-Men just really compelling to me in general. I've always liked those heroes.
And being an outsider, and you know, I don't know how you were in high school, but I think X-Men probably would have been very helpful for me.
Sure,
in
sure,
high
yeah.
school, you know, not fitting in and seeing that as sort of a superpower instead of a weakness. I wish someone would have shown me that as a high school kid.
I can dig it,
I'm
man.
Sure,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
sure it saved a lot of kids, you know, a lot of heartache in high school. But yeah, I mean, like we say about a lot of comic books, there's always more than what we see on the surface. There's always more, you know, subtext
and
allegory. Mm-hmm. And I think X-Men is a perfect example of that. I do want to say, though, Bobby, even as a baby, can use ice. And even as a baby, great hair. Just full head of feathered hair.
that coif that he had in the crib was on point, bro. That was really good.
I even was expecting to see like a dimple in the chin with how much he just looked like a very small man.
a very, very small man with a proportionally large melon.
Yeah. It looked like the head was going to get knocked over, like knock over the whole body at one point. But I did enjoy that. And I liked the shot where the parents walk in and there's just like ice
everywhere. And they're like shivering. Mom is like shivering while dad is holding him. Right. Yeah.
And I did like, and again, speaking of allegory, and you know, the subtext, I liked that Bobby is saying in the voice over here, my parents tried to hide it and you know, keep my mutant things, my extraordinary abilities, you know, hidden. I like that too.
Yeah, for
it
sure.
Was good.
For sure. Like I was saying, a lot of canonically accurate stuff in his story as far as like, you know, he's kind of figuring out his own powers, and then because this is how Charles Xavier and the X-Men do it. He reaches out with his computer, with the Cerebro, and is like, oh, you know, to find new mutants, and then kind of bring them into the fold to help them and train them. The scene in the Danger Room was cool. I liked how they used like the old school costumes too, like the costumes that they showed the X-Men with were like the original style 60s costumes, which was pretty neat.
It looked like a comic book cover
right
at a few points. Yeah,
there's that one frame that I always laugh at in this episode where they do a one shot or a shot of the whole team together in the Danger Room, and it's like Marvel Girl, Cyclops, Angel, Beast, and Cyclops.
Two Cyclopsies.
He's in there twice.
Sent me a screenshot of that, and I didn't even notice it when I watched it because it's such a brief shot.
It's a quick shot. Yeah.
So who got subbed out? Iceman.
Iceman. They just put two Cyclopses in.
The kids won't notice.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, it was.
They won't be
fun.
Talking about this show 40 years from now. On a not quite radio show.
Oh gosh. I guess the other thing that is interesting is because when you're doing an origin story like this, you're sort of putting upon yourself the requirement that you sort of explain how the superhero's powers work, right? Mm-hmm. And what did you think of their explanation of it that basically is like okay, mutants, you're born with powers, and you have to, like the scene at the party, he's like, okay, I gotta think about ice cubes. Yeah. You know, does that, like...
But not too much.
Right. Like, I guess I'm trying to think, is that the best way to sum that up? Is there a different approach that could have been taken that would have worked as far as saying, this is how their powers work?
Right, I guess the party and the school dance, to me, I put those two things kind of together in my mind because he can't control it in either case. At the dance, he discovers that he only can produce ice when he's nervous, which is never really developed again in this episode.
Right.
Just happens that one time.
Yeah.
But then the second time, he's trying to impress Judy again, and he's like, all right, I'm going to get ice, but he still can't control it.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I think it's a little bit too easy to say I just have to think about ice. But it also kind of lends itself to the greater long story of Bobby Drake here, that he's learned how to just think about it enough.
Right.
And not let himself get too nervous when he's thinking about it. Because I laughed out loud and kind of empathized a little bit with Bobby when he was at the party, and then all of a sudden the room was full of ice, very well cubed.
Oh yeah, ice. Beautiful, mean, like, ice. Very, yeah,
like airplane,
like ice from a machine. Thing. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. but then no, he just went way too far, and then you know, him and Judy just weren't meant to be. Judy is never talked about either. She thinks he's a cold fish. Then she dances with him, and it snows, and they have to stop. And then he makes too much ice.
And the only lines she really has, other than the cold fish, a couple of times at the party, she's like, "He's just really weird, really weird, weird."
Mm-hmm. I know the writing of women on the show leaves a lot to be desired.
It does.
Very one note. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You cold fish weirdo. That's basically her credo. That's her MO.
But he gets a hold of his powers in a situation where he rescues a woman from a fire, and then immediately, like, the townspeople are there with their lanterns and pitchforks, like, literally.
Yes. Frankenstein again.
Yeah. Right. There's a lot of Frankenstein vibe going on with this episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the bits with the X-Men, and then Bobby, who is now, we're to understand, like, in control of his powers and stuff, he sees a placard or something with J. Jonah Jameson. This is his first official appearance. Yeah. Like, he was in an earlier episode. I forget which one. It was the Thor episode, right? Where he was like...
Yeah. He had one line.
He had one line, and they didn't even say who he was. But right. Here now, okay, this is J. Jonah Jameson for sure. He sees that Jameson wants someone to turn Spider-Man into him and get a reward, and that's how he meets Spider-Man. Yes. Did you like that? I liked the verbal barbs that were exchanged in that little action sequence between the two of them.
Yeah. Freeze face and insect head and mm-hmm, yeah
mm-hmm.
And
an ice boomerang.
Thank you. You noticed it too. Were you jealous of that one, Jason?
Yes.
As much as a Nerf one.
Oh man! And I wrote in my notes, all caps, more frickin' boomerangs.
It's almost
a finger on the pulse of the American child in 1982.
I think kids just had a fascination with Australian culture in the early 80s. This is the precursor to Crocodile Dundee, Jason.
This is it.
If there's a didgeridoo in one of these episodes, then we know I'm onto something.
Oh, indeed.
But no, I like it, it's okay. So not to get like super nerdy, but I'm like hip deep in Clone Wars right now. The series, because right. It's a thing I have to do. It's a mission I have to accomplish. Like, uh-huh, I have to finish uh-huh. the series before the Bad Batch comes out. It's a thing that I've told myself. This is what happens when Brian hasn't left the house in a year, ladies and gentlemen.
Sure,
the
sure.
things that I have to do. But anyway, in Clone Wars, there's a lot of the, an enemy of an enemy is my friend,
mm-hmm.
right? Like if we don't get along, we are at odds, but if we can agree that we both hate this person or
right,
this creature,
right. mm-hmm.
then we'll work together.
Yeah.
So that's, to me, exactly what this was, where
mm-hmm.
Spider-Man and Iceman don't get along. They don't really explain why. They're just kind of like, hey, freeze face. Hey, mm-hmm. insect. Like, they just don't like each other. Maybe because Spider-Man still is kind of like hated mm-hmm. by the city, like a vigilante.
Well, I got the sense from this scene that, like, Spider-Man had maybe just come on the scene and Iceman didn't even really know who he was. Like, he was
right.
just
it's
some
early
guy.
In the career.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Some guy wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they collectively decide together that
Jameson's a
knob.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. isn't the reason that Iceman wants Spider-Man is because J. Jonah Jameson is offering a reward, and it ends up being like a year subscription to the Daily Bugle and a headshot.
And an autographed picture of Triple J.
I thought that mm-hmm. that was pretty funny. But Spider-Man knew enough at this point, even this early in his career, was like, yeah, let's go to Triple J. You'll see what he's all about. And
right,
sure enough,
right.
that's what he offers is the mm-hmm. reward. I mm-hmm. like that. So
yeah.
did you like them becoming friends?
Oh,
because
yeah.
because of the hatred of Triple J? You
yeah,
did too?
Okay. Yeah, for sure. And I thought that they did a good job of, you know, sort of spelling out that, well, Iceman is a little bit naive here and just thinking that, you know, if he can, if a newspaper says that Spider-Man is a public enemy, that his...
He
his,
must be.
Yeah, and his going up against him is going to turn him into, you know, a hero, which, you know, both of those things are questionable. And
right.
And they find out they've got a lot more in common than they didn't.
Right.
But that's where the origin story ends.
Pretty early, right? Like, we're still in the first act here.
It was definitely the first half of the show. I think it was about, I'm looking at my notes here. Yeah, it was right around 12 minutes.
12 minutes.
Is where that ended. Yep. And so we had a lot left. And this is where the video man half of the story really kicks off. Because Video Man didn't even come to life at that point. Like, his machine had been zapped, but he first, like, erupts out of the console after the Iceman origin tale is done.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. The lightning is now really kicking into high gear and doing what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of became, at this point, a bit of a rehash from the first Video Man appearance, where he wants people inside of his console. That sounded bad, but that's basically what he wants,
I'd
right?
I'd like to get in your console.
Oh, I know you would.
Yikes. No, but it was, yeah, this was more of that Frankenstein deal. Video Man, he pops out of the machine. He makes himself bigger by, like, doing something to the electrical lines, right? Like,
yeah,
he shoots some wavy rings at the electrical lines, and they, like, they embiggen him again. Yep. And then he gets angry at a Video Man billboard, and he's like, blasts that. I don't know. And then he, like, sure. I need to hop and get more juice. And that's where he has his first encounter with the Spider Friends. Good. I mean, everything with Video Man, I thought the action sequences were cool.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of
very entertaining.
Lot of new stuff that they did, and the Spider Friends going against this guy, it was exciting stuff. I had a hard time writing any notes during those scenes because there was not really much dialogue, and it was really it was fast paced. It was good.
Yeah, I agreed. I don't know. I feel like I should like Video Man a lot more than I do because it's video games, and I love video games growing up. I still have a PlayStation 5 in the living room right now that I was just playing before this podcast. Like, I'm into the video game thing, but I just feel like the Video Man villain is not enough to make me want 3 episodes with him. But when they fight him, I'm always like, you, Jason. I'm like, well, this is fun. I like this.
Uh-huh.
It's cool. All 3 heroes together have to do something.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. How do you feel about Video Man in general?
I totally understand what you're saying. I feel like it's the thing that bothers me the most about Video Man is what what blatant catering they're doing to the audience or to the intended audience for the show. You know,
the it's video like, game fans.
Right. Mean. Right. Yeah, the video game playing children, and it's like it's such a to me it feels like such a heavy-handed move from adults who think that they know what kids are really going to be into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't remember the third episode that well, but at least these first two, they did the same thing where it's like we'll just put Video Man in. And that's all we have to do. It's just the Video Man writes itself, you know?
Right.
And yeah, really, yeah. The things that Video Man does just don't make a lot of sense to me. And
it's very similar to the Knights and Demons episode then, where it's like kids are playing Dungeons and Dragons, so let's just make an episode like that, except now it's video games. Let's
right.
make an episode of that. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, yeah. Donald F. Glut, writer of both episodes,
did both. Yeah, I think the very first episode of this podcast, the very first episode of Spidey 81, Donald F. Glut wrote that episode as well, and I was really excited because I saw how often he's come up, and like how he wrote the novelization coming back to Star Wars. He wrote the novelization of Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He did a lot of cartoon shows that we watched growing up in the 90s and late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not batting 1,000 in the Spider-Man universe, Jason.
No, he's not doing that great. Not doing that great.
He must have been out of touch with youth culture in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, and yet someone thought he was really onto something.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know, man.
These crazy ideas, and they're like, okay, all right, Don, fine, write him up, write him up. Yeah,
there's that the first Video Man fight that the Spider Friends have. It's going all Video Man.
He's dominating. Yeah.
Unstoppable for them. I mean, he has some sort of freeze blast that he throws at Firestar. Iceman's powers don't work. Spider-Man can't dodge his video blasts fast enough. And then all of a sudden he's like, okay, I'll see you guys later. I'm going over to the Daily Planet, the Daily Planet, the Daily Bugle building.
I'm gonna stay in my universe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, And I was like, ah, come on, whatever. He at that same time, Jameson is recording a like video editorial. Video Man appears behind him, and then he blasts Jameson and sends him into the video console, as we saw in the first Video Man episode. Did you understand why that happened?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. All right. I didn't, I'm just, in case I missed something, I did not understand at all why he was like, Jameson needs to go in the video game machine, other than it's Jameson that's, you know, one of the other principal characters in this episode.
Yeah. Because it's funny to see him struggling. Mm-hmm. The only thing I could think of is he just wanted him to shut up. Or he wanted to get on TV.
Yeah.
Like you put in your notes, like he wanted to be on network TV, and he was like, yeah. I got this. I got the 8 o'clock prime time slot. This is mine, and everyone's gonna be watching. I'm just gonna step in. Would have been great though if like he would have put on like a hat and a tie, and be like, "Tonight on the news," and just goes into like newscaster mode.
Right,
as Video Man.
As Video Man. Oh, that would be terrific. I would love to hear Video Man's voice. Yes.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It would be funny though if it was just like, you know, just like a normal man voice. It had like no robotic,
nothing robotic at all. Oh gosh!
Right, totally breaks character and becomes a man. Yeah,
there he blasts Jameson into the console, and then he goes to the press room. And Spider-Man notes that, you know, the presses use a lot of power, and it seems like he's like sucking power out of stuff and growing bigger. And it was at this point, this is around like the 17-minute mark or so, where I was like, you know, there's some interesting stuff happening here. They don't know why Iceman's powers aren't working. They're trying to figure out what Video Man really wants. We've got Jameson stuck in the machine now. I was like, this is, you know, there's a lot of loose threads that I'm interested to see them tie up here. But at the
they're
same,
juggling a lot of balls in the air right now.
A lot of things going on. And but then I was also like, we've watched enough episodes of this where I'm like, they've got a little too much going on here. They're going to drop a couple of these, and that kind of is what happens as we go down the stretch, right?
There was part of me that thought, I wonder if this, since it's only a 3-episode season, if it's all just going to be one long story. Mm, and like, you know, now Firestar will no longer have her ability. So then Spider-Man and Iceman have to figure out where she came from to give her back her power. Mm-hmm. And then eventually Spider-Man. But then I thought, again, this is not Clone Wars.
Right.
They're not going to do that. And but yet it always fools me. Spidey 81 did it too, where I was like, this is going to be a two-parter. It's never a two-parter.
No, it's never a two-parter, Brian.
I'm going to learn it by like the penultimate episode of the last season of Amazing Friends, where just I'm like, they're wrapping it up.
Just think of what'll happen in the 90s Spider-Man when they actually do have two-parters, and you are gonna pee your pants.
I'm gonna web my pants. I know. You're absolutely right. Or I'll be so used to it that I'm like, what's going on? What, it's 23 minutes, and what happened? It said to be continued. What is this?
Oh, man.
You can't do this. You can't do that.
We cut back to Jameson at the junkyard. He's walking around in the little line drawing world of Video Man. And
what people thought computer programming looked like back then.
Right, right. then what happens, because Video Man has left the Daily Bugle, and the Spider Friends are, you know, they're racking their brains trying to figure out what his next move is going to be. There's a scene where they're at home, and they come up with a brilliant way to talk to their computer and have them have it tell them where Video Man's probably going to go, which was a thing. And then Video Man turns up at the student arcade at ESU, which you loved, right?
Did you see my note about this?
I did.
Yeah, why didn't UW Oshkosh have a student arcade, Jason?
They had a bowling alley.
That's right, they did.
Yeah.
I never went to it, but they did, yeah. It was just labeled like, you know, the ESU student arcade, and it wasn't that busy.
No.
You would think like an arcade would, on a college campus, if they're going to build one, they will come.
You'd think that would be packed, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't. But it did give another chance for like Video Man to really be in his element here, which is, I think, more likely why they animated this whole set piece.
Sure, sure. And what Video Man does when he gets to the arcade is he video blasts a couple of machines. And one of them is styled very much like Asteroids. And one of them is styled very much like Pac-Man. Obviously, no doubt. Neither of which they have the intellectual rights to directly copy. So they're very similar, but what he does is he somehow his blasts turn a flying saucer from the Asteroids game and a Mr. Grabber character, which is basically like Pac-Man but with teeth.
Right.
Turns them both into three-dimensional giant monsters like Video Man.
Right, real threats. Right. Practical
people right.
or things. Yeah, right. And you made a note that this is where the idea for the movie Pixels came from.
It's movie the Pixels. Same. It's the same right. thing. And
did you see that movie, Jason?
No.
Neither did I.
There's no
awful.
There's no way anyone needed to see that. It looks.
I think, like, the first time I saw the trailer, I'm like, that's kind of a cool concept. But then I was like, I'm not going to sit through 2 hours of Adam Sandler being chased by Donkey Kong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatever the hell happened in that movie. Yeah.
But yeah, now we know where they got the idea for that. It was obviously someone was probably high and watching Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And they're like, that would be a really good movie.
This would be a really good 100-minute movie.
Yeah. But again, so I gotta throw this question back to you again. Did you get a sense of why Video Man did that? Like, what was because up to this point, all we've kind of gleaned is that he wants more electricity. He wants to get bigger. Why did he right. make those other machines come to life?
The only thing that I could draw a conclusion to was that he knew that the Amazing Friends would get in the way of him ruling the world.
Mm-hmm.
And these henchmen that he's now had, Mr. Grabber and Asteroid, mm-hmm. are going to help him get rid of the Amazing Friends. That's the okay. only thing I could think of.
That's a very generous assumption, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said in last week's episode, whenever I get really confused in an action movie
mm-hmm.
and I don't know the villain's motives, I just tell myself, oh, they want to take over the world. And yeah, usually yeah. that's right. And that's kind of what happened here. But again, it's hard to say because Video Man is such a, pardon the pun, a flat character. Like, he doesn't speak. Well,
he doesn't say anything. We don't know anything about what he really wants or needs.
What he wants to do. And let's compare that with last week's episode where the villain literally wanted to start World War III mm-hmm. and continue where Hitler left off.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that's a lofty goal
mm-hmm.
compared to. That's the goal.
I want to continue being two-dimensional and be taller. Yeah.
And I want to get taller, right? He wants to get really tall.
He wants to get really tall.
At least 6 feet.
I can't think of a reason for Video Man to want Mr. Grabber or spaceship to come to life, but it does make again for some compelling action sequences. The ships and Mr. Grabber chasing the spider friends around the campus and sure. whatnot was very interesting. While all this is going on, it's Firestar and Spider-Man who've gone to fight this battle. Bobby's powers have completely dried up. But he has a brilliant idea that maybe if Video Man is what took away his powers, Video Man can give them back. So we see Bobby Drake skateboarding to campus very safely, by the way. Did you notice he had his knee pads and his helmet on?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they made a point to really reflect on that when Spider-Man was talking to him. Like, there was Spider-Man talking in just a like face shot of Bobby Drake in the helmet,
mm-hmm,
just like mm-hmm. listening to Spider-Man, because you know that the kids were like, oh,
mm-hmm,
kids
mm-hmm.
wear helmets too.
Yep,
that's right,
yep.
Little Billy. That's right.
Grown-ups wear helmets too.
That's right.
but this is where Iceman gets shot into the video game console, and then he's with a line drawing next to J. Jonah Jameson, and I thought, you know, that would be an interesting TV show too. I mean, they're coming up with all kinds of great ideas in this episode.
So do you think Video Man gets fed through the energy of getting people inside of his console?
No.
Like, is that his motivation?
No, I don't. I really, I, okay. I'm, So I'm of the opinion, and because, not because of, but it just so happens that the Frankenstein motif runs rampant throughout this thing. I think of Video Man as like Frankenstein's monster. I think it is just, I don't think Video Man thinks about anything. I think it just reacts. Okay. It just wants to get bigger, and it, and anything that gets in its way, it shoots with its video blasts. If you happen to get hit and it puts you in the game, he doesn't care whether or not you're in that game. Yeah, it's just what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He has no motivation. He just wants to keep moving forward, basically.
Right. That's what I think about Video Man.
And I apologize. I stepped on your idea of a TV show, Bobby Drake and J. Jonah Jameson together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What would you call that sitcom?
Oh, that would be the Freak Couple.
Mm-hmm. The Freak Couple.
Because
Wednesdays this fall on NBC.
as soon as Iceman gets into the game, line drawing Jonah looks over him and he's like, "Oh, great! Now I'm here with some freak."
Some freak. Yeah, cue the laugh track.
Oh boy. Yeah, yeah.
So that might have been a compelling episode, but we're at like the 22 and a half minute time mark here.
Right. And, there's about 90 seconds to go in this episode. and there's loads of stuff unresolved.
Right. Firestar still is losing her power.
Uh-huh.
Bobby still doesn't have his.
So right, he's stuck in the machine.
Friends, mm-hmm. Yeah, Amazing Friends are down to just Spider-Man here.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they have to beat the villain that is impossible for three of them to beat.
And Spider-Man is being chased by Mr. Grabber.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Who he, like, right on his heels.
He dubs him Mr. Grabber. He's the mm-hmm. one that gives him that mm-hmm. name. Yeah, so he knows how serious this is.
And so at this point, what happens, to wrap this up for you, dear listener, Spider-Man is like, he has a brilliant idea. He gets Mr. Grabber to chase him over toward Video Man and the flying saucer.
Yep.
For some reason, once they're all kind of lined up, like physically in a line, they just start shooting each other.
Right.
I don't understand. I don't know, but Spider-Man thought of that. He was like, "Oh, this is probably what'll happen if we do this."
And that didn't even cross my mind.
No, not even for a moment.
The bad guys, right? So they all just start shooting each other.
But that's how they take each other out. Like right. Mr. Grabber and Video Man and Spaceship, they all just blast each other to smithereens. While that's going on, the video game console is about to be dropped in the crusher at the scrapyard.
Yeah. The car crusher thing, yeah.
It as soon as they blow up, the machine disappears, and it's just Iceman, who has his powers back now, and J. Jonah Jameson hanging on the teeth of the car smasher, and they're like, "Oh, we better get out of here," and they run away, and they're fine.
No explanation as to how they get out of the console,
or that, or where the console went. It just went away.
Sure. Yep.
I don't understand.
The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away in this universe, Jason.
And then there's the funny scene where Spider-Man asks if they want to go play some video games, and the fire and ice teammates create a big wet rain cloud over Spider-Man's head and get him all wet. And you're like, "Nah, those spider friends.
Those friends." They literally make it rain.
The conclusion of this episode left me very disappointed.
Yeah, I can tell in your notes. Mm-hmm, yeah, and you even said in your notes, you're like, they're gonna have an ending that makes absolutely no sense, and you nailed it. That was exactly right. Do you remember this episode though? Like, did you start watching it knowing how it would end?
No, I couldn't remember how it ended. No, okay. No. I mean, there were a few, you know, fleeting details that I recalled. But even like when Video Man brings the other games to life, I didn't remember that. Like that took me completely by surprise.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was going to say like maybe you had a little bit of a bias because I think we had not vastly different, but pretty different opinions of this episode. Mm-hmm. I think it was just a lot of fun. That's what I kept saying. And I think, I don't know if you would agree or disagree with that, but I think we can agree that the ending made no sense, but sometimes it's okay.
Yeah,
this is an episode where I give it a pass more than I do like a Knights and Demons kind of thing. Mm-hmm, you know,
mm-hmm. No, I hear you. I will say if it was there were a number of things in this episode that I really liked. All the new animation stuff I thought was awesome.
Really cool. Yeah.
All of the fight scenes and the action scenes with Video Man and the Spider Friends and stuff. All that stuff was great, and I was glued to my TV during the action portions.
It's what you want out of this kind of show.
Yeah. And you're right. That was a load of fun. It was just I don't know. For me the nonsense of the story dragged it down enough for me where it just kind of an episode I really was having fun with. It just kind of ruined it for me, and so. If not for the stuff that I thought was awesome, I would have given this one like a one.
Wow.
But because the story was just so dumb.
Like, what did you think of the origin, though?
I loved the origin story. Yeah. The origin story was also very good. The origin story was great. The action was great. The new animation was great. All that great stuff drags this one up to a 2.5 for me.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
this is I feel like we're Siskel and Ebert here. We're gonna disagree. And the balcony's gonna have to close while we sort our differences.
Oh.
I gave this one 4 radioactive spiders, Jason.
That's a very good rating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about it and I was thinking if Jason would allow it, I would do like a 3.75. But I was like, you know, if I'm gonna get that close, I might as well just round it up.
Yeah.
Because it's I mean, I would be very I would be very untrue to myself if I didn't love this episode or really like it, because all I've been wanting this whole time mm-hmm. is a good origin story.
Sure.
Yeah. And now I got it. I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. Mouth. Don't look a gift horse in the mouse. That's a thing people say. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. There it is. Okay. Thank God for editing.
Or the mouse. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't look at a gift horse.
Just don't look.
But I won't disagree with you that it was a premise that didn't really make a whole lot of sense, and also that the very end of it was just a lot of like balls in the air, and then we just take our hands down and all the balls hit the ground. That's what mm-hmm. it felt, and roll credits.
Mm-hmm.
But for sure, for a Saturday morning cartoon, I mean, what are you gonna do from 1981? You're not gonna get a through line. But yeah, I really like, and I gave it a little bit more of a higher ranking too, because Iceman is, as I've made clear, my least favorite of the three amazing friends here.
Mm-hmm.
And they still made me care about his origin and his really good hair. Bobby with the good hair
and his amazing hair. Oh,
at,
boy,
at 3 weeks old even. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to I don't want to have too high of expectations, but next week we get A Fire Star Is Born. And then mm-hmm. along came Spidey. I do want to say they really missed the boat here on what they should have titled this episode, because the other two origin stories are like a play on a thing.
Right.
They should have called this The Iceman Cometh.
I know. Yeah.
That's a miss. Come on, people. That's why you're not getting 5 spiders from me. Come on.
Love it. Oh, boy. Yeah, so there is some looking I got to do here to see what order they play on Disney Plus, because
I was thinking the same thing.
The listings, the air date listings of this series have season 2, where we go Iceman, Firestar, Spidey, but yep, I think on aired. Disney yep. they go Iceman, Spidey, Firestar for some reason. I don't understand that, but whatever. I mean,
we'll watch it in air order, I'm assuming.
I reckon so. And you know, the point is, to you, dear listener, stay tuned for 2 more weeks if you want to hear all the origin stories. That's the whole kit and caboodle right there.
You don't know what we're going to talk about next week, so just tune in and find out.
It's going to be a mystery.
True.
But this was fun. Yeah, fun episode. The stuff stuck in my craw. I'm glad you really enjoyed it.
I did.
You know, we're just gonna keep on keeping on, man. We're gonna do it again next week, and
we're a third of the way through the second season.
Perfect. Love it. Good to talk to you, buddy. We'll do it again in a few days.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to Spider-Man and His Amazing Fans. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite app. Follow us on Twitter @BKO Radio and like the show on Facebook. Reach us by email, SpideyFansPodcast@gmail.com. Most importantly, if you enjoyed it, share with a friend.